I guessed I'd done the wrong thing.
Adrina, did I ask you for a stock tip?
He asked with annoyance.
No, I did not. I asked you to give me your dreams. I'm trying to help you restore your memory. Don't you realize yet that's why I put you in the rocking chair? I've tried to make it seem your loss of memory is natural, but it isn't. All I wanted you to do was regain what you've forgotten.
I didn't believe him. I knew what he wanted. He wanted me to turn into the first Adrina. That's why he had all those books about black magic and psychic powers hidden away in his study. Pulling away, I stared back at the house again, terribly upset now. Back and forth, Vera was still rocking. Oh, God. Suppose she had the only dream the chair ever gave me. Would she scream? Would Papa go running to save her? Or just suppose everything Papa had told me was true and there was a gift to be gained. Then any second she might replace me in his heart. Breathlessly, I gushed, undecided no longer. There I was, Papa, a grown-up woman working in a huge place with business machines all around. They glowed, changed colors, talked in strange voices, and sent messages through the air. I was up front instructing a large class how to use them. So that's why I thought... But of course, I should have let you decide what it meant. The letters I told you were on all the machines. Every last one, Papa. IBM. For a reward, his smile came tight and thin, though he did embrace me.
All right. You've tried to help me financially, but that's not what I wanted. Memories, Adrina. Fill the holes in your brain with the right memories. We'll try the rocking chair again later and see if the next time doesn't skip the woods and put you down in the right place.
I was about to cry, for I had had a funny dream about machines, and the pin had wanted to stop on those initials 4 times.
Don't cry, my love,
he said, kissing me again.
I understand, and I might even put some money on that stock, even though it has had a 30% run-up and is due for a sell-off. Still,
he went on thoughtfully,
it wouldn't hurt to wait for the profit-taking to end, and then buy in heavily before another climb. She is intuitive, and her heart is pure, even if...
Jumping to my feet, I ran to escape his embarrassing ruminations. Now he was going to put money on that stock. What if it continued to go down after the profit-taking? Poor Mama was slaving in the kitchen, preparing for a stupid party she didn't need to have, when she was feeling so rotten. I ran to a window where I could watch Papa still down by the river, standing now and skipping pebbles across the water as if he didn't have a care in the world. Mama didn't say a word about tomorrow being my 9th birthday. Was that because tomorrow truly wasn't my birthday? I went to the closet under the back stairs and checked the newspapers. Tomorrow was September the 9th, and just like me, I forgot today was the 8th. Was reaching the age of 9 really so meaningful? Yes, I decided, as the day wore on and no one but Papa mentioned my birthday. Reaching 9 was dangerous. The party began at 9:30, not long after I was sent to bed. The noise made by the crowd of 20 of Papa's best friends drifted up to me, even though my room was far from the party rooms. I knew there were bankers down there, and lawyers, doctors, and other affluent people with aspirations to become richer. They liked our parties. The food was elegant, the liquor plentiful, and the best thing of all, the moment Mama sat down to play the piano, the party came alive. Because she was a musician, she drew other musicians who liked to perform with her, so that the doctors and lawyers would bring their teenage sons or daughters who knew how to play some musical instrument with considerable skill. And together, with Mama as inspiration, they'd have a jam session. In my nightgown on bare feet, I raced to peek at her sitting on the piano bench. She was wearing a red silk gown that had a cowl neckline that drooped so low it showed more than Papa would approve. All the men gathered around the piano, leaning over Mama's shoulders, staring down into her bodice as they encouraged her to play on, play faster, put more jazz into what seemed to me jazzy enough. Her fingers flew. She bounced with the tempo that quickened. Smiling and laughing in response to whispers in her ear, Mama played with one hand and sipped the champagne her other hand held. She put down the empty glass, signaled a boy of about 20 to play his accordion, and they both began some wild version of a polka that no one could resist dancing to. According to Papa, Mama was all things to all people and true to no one, not even herself. If her audience wanted classical music, she gave them that. If they wanted popular ballads, she could give them those, too. If you asked her what kind of music she liked best, she'd answer, "I like all kinds." I thought it was wonderful to be so open-minded and so versatile. Aunt Elsbeth didn't like any music that wasn't by Grieg. From all the fun Mama seemed to be having, who would ever guess she'd complained all day about having to slave for people she didn't even like?
"Really, Damien, you expect too much of me. I'm in my 6th month, really showing, and you want them to see me like this?" "You're gorgeous, and you know it, pregnant or not. You always look sensational when you put on your makeup and wear a bright color and smile."
"You told me this morning I looked awful." Fatigue had made her sound hoarse.
"And it worked, didn't it? You jumped out of bed, shampooed your hair, polished your nails, and I've never seen you look lovelier."
"Damien, Damien," my mama had whispered then, her voice choked with emotion, and then the door had banged shut. I'd stood alone in the hallway outside their bedroom, wondering what they did after Papa kicked the door. All of the words exchanged between them echoed in my head as I watched Mama at the piano. She was so beautiful. My aunt looked dowdy in comparison in her print dress that seemed right for the kitchen but nowhere else. I yelped from the pain of a pinch on my arm. There was Vera in her nightgown, and she was not supposed to come downstairs until Papa told her she could, and so far he hadn't. Vera never came near me that she didn't hurt me in some minor way.
"Your mother is nothing but a big show-off," she whispered.
"A woman as pregnant as she is shouldn't show herself." Yet when I glanced at Vera, I saw admiration in her eyes as she too caught the rhythm of Mama's music.
"The first Adrina could play piano just like that," said Vera in my ear. "She could read music too, and the watercolors she painted. You can't do anything in comparison."
"Neither can you," I flared back. But I was hurt again. "Good night, Vera. You'd better disappear when I do, or else Papa might see you and punish you again." I headed back for my room. Halfway up the stairs, I looked back to see Vera still hiding behind the beaded portières, clinging to them for balance as her feet shuffled in rhythm to the music, watching until the very end. It wasn't until the noise below stopped that I was able to fall into a deep and dreamless sleep. It was my way to toss restlessly, and Vera's way to sleep soundly. I was wishing I had that knack when I drifted off, only to be awakened what seemed only seconds later. My parents were arguing violently. No wonder Mama didn't like parties with Papa. Every time we had a party, it ended this way. "Lord," I prayed as I slipped out of bed, "today is my 9th birthday, and this isn't a good way for it to start. Please let it be like March and go out like a lamb." Vera was already kneeling on the hall carpet, peeking through the keyhole. She held a cautioning finger before her lips and silently gestured for me to go away. I didn't like her spying on my parents, and I refused to leave. Instead, I knelt beside her and tried to shove her away. Papa's strong voice came right through the solid oak door.
"And in your condition, too, you danced like some cheap little tramp. You made a fool of yourself, Lucietta." "Leave me alone, Damien," cried Mama, as I must have heard her cry 100 times or more. "You invite guests without telling me in advance. You go out and buy liquor we can't afford and flowers and champagne for them to drink, and even hand me a glass. And when I get drunk, you become enraged. What am I supposed to do at a party? Sit around and watch you perform?"
"You never know how to do anything properly,"
Papa shouted. He had the kind of voice that could hurt your eardrums when he was angry, and a sweet, soft voice to use when he wanted something from you. Why wasn't he considerate of Mama when she was so obviously in need of his understanding? Didn't he think at all of that little baby that might be hearing his rage? Inside, I was all a quiver, trembling with fear for Mama's health. Was this the way love went? On and off like an electric switch? I went back to my bedroom and pulled a down pillow over my ears, and still I could hear them fighting. Sickened, I didn't know what to do but get up again and go back to where Vera still leaned against the door. She, too, was trembling, but with suppressed laughter. Furious, I wanted to slap her.
"You flirted, Lucietta. Flirted, and in your condition, too. You cuddled so close to that teenage piano player on the bench you seemed blended into one person. You jiggled.
Your nipples could be seen. Shut up!
She yelled. My hands rose to cover my mouth. I wanted to scream out and stop them.
Damien, you're a brute. An inconsiderate, selfish, contradictory bore. You want me to play, but you are enraged when you lose the spotlight. I've said it before, and I'll say it again and again. You have no talent but the ability to run your mouth, and you're jealous of mine.
Now she'd done it. He'd show her no mercy now. Slowly, slowly as in a nightmare trance, I sank to my knees beside Vera. She allowed me to peek through the keyhole just in time to see his stinging slap wham against Mama's face. I cried out just as my mother did, feeling her pain and humiliation as my own. Vera started to laugh as she shoved me away and put her eye to the keyhole.
Adrina, she whispered. He's taking off his belt. Now your mother is going to get what she deserves, and I'm glad, really glad. It's time he punished her, as he ought to punish you.
Furiously, I slapped at her, my rage as great as Papa's as I shoved her aside and clawed the door open. I fell into my parents' bedroom, tripping over Vera's sprawled form. Papa whirled around, shirtless, his trousers half unzipped. His face was a mask of rage. Mama was curled up on the bed, her arms hugged protectively over her protruding middle.
"What the hell are you two doing here?"
roared Papa, throwing his belt to the floor and pointing to the door.
"Get out, and don't you ever spy on us again!"
Jumping to my feet and trying to make my voice as powerful as his, I yelled, "Don't you dare hit my mother again, or use that belt to whip her! Don't you dare!" He glared at me. His dark eyes were wild and wide. He reeked of liquor. As I glared back, my eyes wide and wild too, he began to simmer down. He wiped his huge hand over his face, glanced at his reflection in a mirror, and seemed shocked.
"I'd never strike your mother. You should know that,"
he said weakly, as if afraid I'd seen or ashamed that I'd seen. I didn't know which. Out in the hall, Vera tittered. He spun around to yell,
"How many times have I told you that this part of the house belongs to me? Get the hell out of here, Vera."
"Oh, Papa, please don't yell at me. None of it was my fault. It was Adrina who came into my room and woke me out of a sound sleep and made me come with her. She's always spying through your keyhole, Papa, when she can't sleep." His head snapped around. I could tell he considered me too honorable to spy.
"Go to your room, Adrina,"
he ordered coldly.
"And don't you ever spy on me again. I thought better of you than that. It may seem to you that I'm a brute, but that's only because I'm the only man in a house of women bent on destroying me. Even you try in your own way. Now out! Both of you out!"
"You won't hurt Mama?" I held my ground and waited for an answer, though he took a step forward.
"Of course I won't hurt Mama."
Sarcasm was in his voice.
"If I hit her and hurt her, then I'd have to pay her doctor's bills, wouldn't I? My son is inside her, and I am thinking of him."
Weakly, my mother sat up to call me to her. Her arms opened as I approached. Her kisses felt wet on my face.
"Do as your father says, darling. He won't hurt me. He's never really hurt me, in physical ways."
Undecided, I looked from her to Papa as he shoved Vera out of the room, delivering a hard slap to her bottom as he did. Then he turned to me. I, too, feared a slap, but he took me into his embrace.
"I'm sorry I woke you up. When I drink too much, I look in the mirrors and see a fool who doesn't know when to quit, and then I want to punish someone because I've failed myself."
I didn't understand any of that.
"Everything will be just fine. The party is over."
There was a sob in his voice, pain in his eyes, shame, too.
"Go back to bed and forget all you heard and saw here. I love you, and I love your mother, and tonight has seen the last of my parties. No more. Ever."
I lay on my bed, torn with doubts about men, about marriage. I decided that night I'd never marry, not in 1,000,000 years, not when all men could be like Papa, wonderful and terrible, deceitful and lovable, and cruel even when he loved, wielding the belt in private, screaming abuse, criticizing, stealing self-confidence and instilling self-loathing and a deep sense of shame for just being female. Perhaps Aunt Elsbeth was right. Men were king of the mountains, king of the woods, king of the home and office and everywhere, just because they were male. The Nightmare in Daylight. That night, when finally I fell into sleep, I tossed and fretted and dreamed awful things. But I didn't dare whimper or scream for fear Papa would come flying into my room to question me. From now on, no matter what went wrong in my life, I'd handle it all by myself. How could I forgive him even one slap on my mother's face? Confusion was a daily state of mind for me, so why should I feel so depressed and disappointed by someone I loved when I'd known all along I could hate him too? Baffled by my own contrariness, I somehow managed to slip into a light dream, tortured by horrible visions of bony people ambling over a frail bridge into nowhere. I willed myself to wake up and found tears had wet my pillow. I suspected the day would give me little pleasure, and the tears I'd cried without knowing would be tears for a very good reason. Depression hung about me at dawn while I bathed, dressed, and quietly crept down the stairs. The house was full of gloom. No sunlight came through the stained glass windows. I didn't have to step over the colors, but I wished the colors back to make this day seem brighter and more ordinary. One glance out of a kitchen window showed me a murky, dark sky that threatened rain. Morning mists hung heavy over the River Lyle. Distant foghorns sounded sad and mournful, and far away, ships putting out to sea sent back melancholy goodbyes. The seagulls that always hung over the place where Mama fed the ducks and geese could be heard but not seen. Ghostly and muffled, their shrill, plaintive cries came to me and tickled goosebumps on my arms. On a day like this, only awful things would happen. Send out the sun, God. Send out the light. It's my 9th birthday, God, and on this day, the first and best Adrina died in the woods. I wanted the fog to lift, to tell me this birthday of mine was not foreboding terrible things ahead just because it was so dreary. I stood near the back stairs, waiting to hear my mother's footfalls, or the sweet way she'd hummed to herself as she dressed and moved about upstairs, her pretty satin mules clickety-clacking where the floors weren't covered by rugs. "Hurry up and come down, Mama. I need to see you." She'd take away my fears. I left the kitchen, which seemed so bleak without Mama moving around in there, and went into the formal dining room. All its 20 chairs were lined up along a huge rectangular table. That table made a wonderful dancing floor when no one was around, and often I took off my shoes to just slide up there. But today the room was dreary and hardly a place for dancing. No one had pulled open the heavy green draperies to let in some light. Always Mama did that as soon as she reached the first floor. When I opened the draperies and looked around, the cheeriest room in the house still looked as grim as the others. Somewhere there had to be a calendar to mark with a red circle this 9th birthday of mine. But I shouldn't want a red circle, for this had been her birthday too. On this day, she would have been 18 years old. How young Mama must have been when she married Papa. Looking out the window, I saw the first few drops of rain begin to fall. Oh, dear God, did it always rain on September the 9th? Work. Aunt Elsbeth was always saying that when she was working, she didn't have time to worry about anything. That's what I'd do. I'd fry the bacon, whip the eggs, make the omelets, scrape the dishes after the meal, and Mama could sit and feel pleased about how well she'd trained me. If only Aunt Elsbeth and Vera would keep their mouths shut. I'd no sooner put the frying pan on the gas range, very intent on starting the bacon off in a cold pan so it wouldn't curl, when I was rudely shoved to one side.
"What the devil do you think you're doing?"
barked my aunt. "Helping Mama." Poor Aunt Elsbeth couldn't cook worth a darn. Nobody wanted her in the kitchen unless she was there to scrub the floor or clean the windows.
"What nasty thoughts are in your head?"
barked my aunt, taking over the bacon. Right away, she turned the heat up too high. She wouldn't listen if I told her she should keep the flames low. I pulled out what I'd need for 5 place settings, watching my aunt as I did. A cup slipped from my hand and fell to break on the floor. I stood there, frozen. It was Papa's favorite coffee mug. The only one he wanted to drink from. Now he'd have another reason to be angry with me. My aunt threw me a disdainful glance.
Now look what you've done. You'd be a bigger help if you stayed out of the kitchen. That coffee mug was the last of a set given to your parents as a wedding gift. He's going to blow when he knows what you've done.
What's idiot Adrina done this time? Asked Vera, limping into the kitchen, falling into a chair and putting her arms on the table so she could rest her head on them. I'm still sleepy. This is the noisiest house. You can't ever get enough sleep. Setting the table was the one thing I thought I could do correctly, and now my aunt was shouting something about using too many plates.
3 place settings, girl. That will be enough.
I turned to stare at her. Why only 3? She kept right on turning over the bacon.
Your mother's contractions began just before dawn. It seems all her children have to come just when I've finally fallen asleep.
Do contractions mean Mama's baby is on the way?
Of course.
But isn't the baby coming early?
That's the way it is sometimes. There's no way of predicting exactly when a baby will come. She's over 6 months, going on 7, so if the doctor can't stop the miscarriage, it has a chance to live anyway.
Oh, golly. I was hoping the baby would have plenty of time to be finished, with hair and little fingernails and toenails. How long does it take for a baby to be born? I asked timidly.
No doubt it will take someone like Lucetta all day and most of tomorrow, knowing how she likes to make even the most simple and natural thing look very difficult and painful.
Aunt Elspeth stretched her thin lips into a mean spinster smile.
Spoiled. All her life spoiled, just because she happened to be born prettier than most girls.
Has Papa called to say Mama's having lots of pain? Did he say she was losing the baby? I wanted to scream at her for saying so little when it was my mother and my brother or sister involved. The heavy knot in my chest began to weigh more as it grew larger. The rain was forecasting trouble. The nightmare flitted in and out of my thoughts. Those bony people.
Adrina is spoiled, too, Vera contributed, and she isn't even the prettiest daughter.
I tried to swallow some awful stuff my aunt had thrown in a blender, a mixture she said would put meat on my gaunt bones and take the hollowness from my cheeks. Vera giggled when she said this. The bacon was thrown down the garbage disposal, burned to such a dry crisp, even my aunt wouldn't eat it. Grouchy and irritable, Vera complained about the omelets my aunt had tried to make tasty.
Gee, it's sure going to be difficult to enjoy food now that Mama isn't here to cook the meals.
Vera put great stress on Mama just to watch her own mother wince. Aunt Elspeth tried to pretend she didn't hear the barb. It was me who cleaned up the kitchen when my aunt went to watch TV, and me who swept the floor as Vera hurried off to finish dressing for school. As I polished the stove, I wondered if I was prettier than Vera, and if I was even half as beautiful as that first and best Adrina had been. I pessimistically guessed I couldn't be from all the praise he gushed about her, radiant, transcendent, ethereal beauty.
"Now you stay home and out of the woods,"
warned my aunt from the other room when she heard the back door open.
"It's raining, and the last thing your father said was to keep an eye on you and not let you wander off. If the rain stops, you can play in the backyard, but go no farther."
"What did he say about me?" asked Vera, all ready to hurry to where the school bus would pick her up. She wore a yellow rain slicker with a hood over her hair.
"Damien didn't mention you."
How cold my aunt could make her voice when she wanted to. She didn't care much for her own bastard daughter. I smiled to myself, for it sounded so silly. Many a time I'd sneaked to peek at the television my aunt selfishly kept for her own viewing pleasure, and I knew those soap people were always having babies out of wedlock.
"You can't trust Adrina when it comes to Arden Lowe," called Vera back hatefully. "You'd better lock the doors, bolt the windows, or somehow she'll slip over to see him. You just wait and see, and sooner or later she's going to let him..."
"Let him what?" I asked, scowling at her.
"Vera?"
called my aunt.
"Not one more word out of you. Get out of here before you miss the bus."
Enviously, I watched Vera stomp off toward the highway, making the water in every puddle splash. Just before she turned the bend, she looked my way and thumbed her nose. Vera disappeared, and still I stood on, thinking about Mama, hoping it wasn't hurting too much and that there wouldn't be a great loss of blood. All pain seemed to come with lots of blood, and lots of mental anguish, too. I already knew about that. Maybe that was the worst kind of pain because nobody knew about it but you. Why didn't Papa call home and talk to me? I wanted to know what was going on. I hung around the telephone so long that the rain went away and the gloomy, quiet house began to wear on my nerves. When the rain ended, I walked down by the river where our backyard ended. In the weak sunlight under the pale, washed sky, I tossed pebbles into the river as I'd seen Papa do. A week without Mama's cooking was going to make me lose weight, and I was already skinny. Papa didn't call all day long. I worried, fretted, paced the floor, went often to the windows. Vera trudged home, complaining she didn't like the vegetable stew Aunt Elspeth had prepared for dinner. Then I saw Arden come flying down our drive with a huge box fastened to his bike. I ran outside to meet him, afraid my aunt would report his visit to my father.
"Happy birthday,"
he called, grinning as he left his bicycle and came running to me.
"Haven't got but a second to stay. I brought you something my mother made for you, and a little something from me, too."
Had I told him it was my birthday? I didn't think I had. I hadn't even known myself until yesterday. His eyes were warm and bright as I tore into the largest box. Inside was a wonderful violet dress with a white collar and cuffs. A small bouquet of silk violets was pinned at the neckline.
"Mom made it for you. She says she can measure anyone with her eyes. Do you like it? Do you think it will fit?"
Impulsively, I threw my arms about him, so happy I wanted to cry. No one else had remembered my birthday. He seemed embarrassed and delighted with my reaction, then hastily handed me a smaller box.
"It's nothing much, really, but you told me you had difficulty remembering and were keeping a dated journal. I looked everywhere to find you one to match the color of the dress Mom made you, but journals don't come in violet, so I bought you a white one with painted-on violets. And if you can slip over to our house around 5, Mom's got a birthday cake all decorated just for you. If you can't come, I'll bring it to you."
I wiped my eyes and choked back my tears of gratitude. "Arden, the baby's coming today. My mother's been gone since before dawn, and we haven't heard one word. I'll come if Papa calls and tells me that Mama and the baby are okay. If he doesn't, I can't leave." Gingerly, as if afraid I might scream or resist, he hugged me briefly, then let me go.
"Don't look so worried. Babies are born every second of the day, millions of them. It's a natural thing. I'll bet your aunt forgot all about your birthday, didn't she?"
I nodded and ducked my head so he couldn't see the pain I felt. The pretty little diary he'd given me had a golden key to lock away my secrets. Oh, I had plenty of secrets, unknown even to me.
"I'll be waiting on the edge of the woods after I deliver the newspapers. I'll wait until the sun goes down, and if you don't show up, I'll bring your birthday cake here."
I couldn't let him do that. Papa would find out. "I'll come tomorrow for sure, and we can celebrate then. Thank Billy for this wonderful dress. I just love it. And thank you for the beautiful diary. It's just what I wanted. Don't wait at the edge of the woods. Terrible things happen in the woods, especially on this day. I don't want you there after dark." The look he gave me seemed haunted, strange, and full of something I didn't quite understand.
"See you later, Adrina. I'm glad you're 9 years old."
Then he was gone, and I was left feeling not so lonely and unhappy. My aunt's dinner was so tasteless even she ate without much enthusiasm. Still, Papa didn't call. "That's the kind of awful man he is," said Vera, "selfish and without regard for anyone's feelings but his own. I'll bet you right now he's in some bar passing out cigars. And you can bet your bottom dollar, sweet Adrina, you won't be his favorite once he brings home that baby, girl or boy." That night, I flitted in and out of nightmares. I saw babies waiting to be born floating around on clouds, all of them crying to be my mama's child. I saw Papa use a huge baseball bat to knock all the girl babies out into the universe, and then he snatched one huge baby boy and called him son. The brother I thought I wanted grew up overnight to be a giant who stepped on me, and Papa didn't even care. I woke up to see my room pale and foggy. The sun was only a rosy glow on the horizon. Still tired, I fell again into dreams, and this time Mama came and hugged me and told me I was the best and most wonderful daughter, and she'd be seeing me someday soon.
"Be a good girl. Obey Papa.
she whispered as she kissed me. I didn't hear her words, only felt that's what she said. I watched her fade away until she was part of one rose-colored cloud that shimmered like some of her fancy evening gowns. Strange to wake up and know my parents weren't in our home. Even stranger to have dreamed about them. I'd never dreamed about anyone until they'd done something to hurt or disappoint me. I dreamed about Vera a great deal. All that day was more of the same. My agitation grew so great I called Billy and told her to hold the birthday party, for Papa still hadn't called, and I had to be here when he did.
I understand, darling. Your cake will wait, and if need be, I'll make you a fresh one.
Around 4, my aunt called me into the kitchen.
Adrina,
she began as she pulled out the blender.
Your father telephoned while you were upstairs. The baby is born. She's been named Sylvia.
Not once did she look my way. Not once. I hated for people to talk to me without looking at me. Vera was busy for a change, peeling potatoes.
Now you're in for it, she said with a mean grin.
He'll like her more than he does you, vacant head.
Stop that, Vera. I don't ever want to hear you call Adrina that name again.
It was the first time my aunt had ever defended me, and I looked at her gratefully.
Vera, go upstairs and do your homework. Adrina can finish peeling the potatoes.
My gratitude vanished. Always I was doing Vera's chores. It was like having a wicked stepsister and I was Cinderella. I glowered as Vera smirked.
I'm sorry to do that to you,
said my aunt in what was for her a kind tone.
But I wanted to talk to you alone.
Is Mama all right? I asked cautiously.
Adrina, I have more to tell you,
said my aunt falteringly. Beyond the kitchen, I could see a lock of apricot-colored hair as Vera hid to eavesdrop.
It's all right, Ellie,
said Papa, who was just then coming into the kitchen from another doorway. He fell wearily into a chair.
I'll tell her in my own way.
He'd come so quickly and quietly out of nowhere that I stared at him as if at a stranger. I'd never seen him with so much beard stubble, never seen his clothes so rumpled. His eyes were red-rimmed and swollen with dark circles underneath. He met my eyes briefly, then put his elbows on the table and bowed his head into his hands, covering his face as his shoulders trembled. Even more alarmed, I ran to him and tried to embrace him as he so often embraced me. Papa, you look so tired. My heart seemed to have dropped into my shoes. Why was he trembling? Why did he hide his face? Was he so disappointed the baby was a girl that he just couldn't cope with the idea of another like me? He shuddered before he lifted his head and lowered his hands and clenched them into fists. He struck the table several hard blows, making the vase of flowers topple over. Quickly, my aunt was running to stand it upright again. She went for a sponge to mop up the water as I ran to fill the vase with water again. Papa, hurry. Tell me about Mama. It seems she's been gone a whole month. His dark eyes were watery with unshed tears. He shook his head from side to side with that same motion dogs use to throw off water. There was panic struggling to stay out of his eyes, and when he spoke, I heard the heavy slowness of his words with dread.
Adrina, you're getting to be a big girl now.
I stared at him, hating the way he'd begun.
Remember how you used to tell me about tea times, and how Aunt Mercy Marie made life and death seem in a constant battle? Well, that's the way it is. Life and death are as much a part of our human experience as day and night, sleep and wakefulness. One is born, another dies. We lose, we gain. That's the only way you can look at life and stay sane.
Papa, I sobbed, don't you...
Oh, enough of this,
cried my aunt.
Damien, why don't you just come straight out and tell her? You can't always shield Adrina from the harshness of life. The longer you put it off, the harder it will be when she finally has to face up to the truth. Stop putting this daughter of yours into a world of fantasy.
He listened to her harsh words and her brusque, abrasive voice and looked at me regretfully.
I suppose you're right,
he said with a sigh. One of those tears that glittered in his eyes slipped to the corner and trickled down his face. He reached to draw me into his arms, then lifted me onto his lap and cuddled me close against his chest. Then he had to clear his throat.
Sweetheart, this isn't easy for me to say, I've never had to give news like this to anyone, much less to the child of my heart. You may have heard in the past that your mother had a dreadful time delivering you.
Yes. Yes, I had heard that before. But she'd had trouble with the first Adrina, too.
She had an even worse time with Sylvia.
He held me tighter, almost crushing my bones.
I think I explained to you some time ago how a baby comes through the mother's birth canal and out into the world.
He hesitated, filling me with even more anxieties.
Poor Sylvia was caught in that canal, perhaps too long.
Again he paused. My heart was beating so loud I could hear the thudding. Vera had stepped into the kitchen and was listening too. Her dark, dark eyes seemed already knowing.
Darling, hold fast to me now. I've got to say it, and you have to hear it. Your mother is gone, darling. Gone on to heaven. She died shortly before Sylvia was delivered.
I heard him say it, but I didn't believe it. No. No, it just couldn't be that way. I needed my mother. I had to have her, and God had already robbed Papa of his best Adrina. Was he so heartless he could hurt Papa again? No, Papa. My mother is too young and pretty to die, I sobbed. I was still a little girl. Who was going to help me grow up? I stared at him to see if he'd grin and wink, and that would mean this was all some ugly trick dreamed up by Vera. I glanced at my aunt, who stood with her head bowed and her hands wringing out her apron that was spotlessly clean. Vera wore a peculiar look, as if she was just as stunned as I was. Papa's head bowed down on my shoulder then, and he was crying. Oh, he wouldn't cry if it weren't true. I went numb inside, and the tears in my brain flooded and washed my screams onto my face.
I loved her, Adrina,
sobbed my father.
Sometimes I wasn't all I should have been, but I loved her just the same. She gave up so much to marry me. I know that I kept her from the career she wanted, and I told myself daily that she wouldn't have amounted to anything. But she would have if I hadn't come into her life. She was turning down one man after another, determined to be a concert pianist, but I wouldn't let her refuse my proposal. I wanted her, and I got her. And then I told her she was only a mediocre musician, more to console myself than to console her. I wanted to be the center of her world, and she made me that. She gave me so much of herself, trying to be all I wanted, even when what I wanted wasn't what she wanted. She taught herself how to please me, and for that, I should have been grateful. I never told her I was grateful.
He broke then, and had to dry his eyes and clear his throat again before he went on.
She gave me you, Adrina. She gave me other things, too, and now that it's too late, I realize I didn't appreciate her nearly enough.
Somewhere in my frozen panic, I found visions of him standing above her, wielding his belt. I heard her voice again as she'd spoken on the last night I saw her alive.
He's never hurt me. Physically.
He must have hurt her emotionally. I felt rivers of hot tears flooding my eyes, melting my face. And why didn't Papa mention how she'd given him the best of all daughters, that dead daughter in the cemetery?
No,
Papa repeated, quaking all over and trying to drown me with his grief.
I didn't appreciate her nearly enough.
I was angry at Papa for starting that baby, angry at God for taking her away, angry at Vera and everybody else who had a mother when I didn't. Now I had only an aunt who hated me, and Vera wasn't one whit better. And Papa, what kind of love was his? Not the kind I really needed, the dependable, safe kind that never lied. Who would I have to confide in now? Not my aunt. She'd never want to hear what I needed to say, nor would she tell me all I needed to know about growing up. Who was there to teach me how to make a man love me? Papa's kind of love was so selfish and cruel. Somehow I'd known since the moment I woke up this morning that something awful would happen. Something that was wise in me, all-knowing, especially about tragedy, had prepared me in advance, and that's why I'd dreamed of her this morning. Perhaps she'd even come to me and said goodbye before she faded into a rose-colored cloud. Why did somebody always have to die on my birthday? What if God took Papa, too, and I had only my aunt who'd destroy the best in me? "Where's the baby?" I asked in a thin, brittle voice.
Darling, darling,
began Papa.
It's going to be all right. Really it is.
Backing away and glaring at him, I could tell he was lying. His wide shoulders drooped.
All right, let me try to help you understand. Newborn babies are always frail, especially those who are premature. Sylvia is very small, only 3.5 pounds. She's not a finished baby like you were. No hair, no fingernails or toenails, so she needs a great deal of professional attention. It's not possible to give that to her here. She's in an incubator, Audrina, a heated glass case where the doctors and nurses can keep a vigilant watch over her. That's why Sylvia will have to stay in the hospital a while longer.
I want to see her. You take me to the hospital so I can see her. Why, for all I know, Mama might not have even had a baby, but died from... And so help me, as much as I wanted to tell him, I couldn't say he'd killed her.
Sweetheart,
he went on in his heavy, flat voice, his dark eyes so tired.
Sylvia is a tiny, tiny baby. The nurses take care of her around the clock. They wear masks over their faces to keep her atmosphere sterile. Children your age carry many germs around. They wouldn't let you near her. She may not even live, so you must prepare yourself for her death, too.
Oh, God. If that happened, then Mama's death would be meaningless. If death could ever be meaningful. I told myself that Sylvia would live, for I was going to pray morning, noon, and night until the day she came home to me and I'd be her mother.
So little to have caused so much trouble and pain,
murmured Papa wearily, once more putting his head onto his folded arms on the table. He closed his eyes and seemed to sleep. Aunt Elspeth hovered over him, seemingly wanting to console him and not knowing how to do it. Once she even started to touch his face, but quickly she snatched her hand away and only her eyes lingered to caress him. She was blaming him just as I was, I thought, never thinking perhaps Mama just wasn't built right to bear babies easily. Then, as if Papa felt my aunt hovering over him, he lifted his head and stared straight at her with some unspoken challenge in his tired but steadfast gaze.
"I hope you can afford to hire a nurse to take care of Sylvia when she comes home," said Aunt Elspeth in a flat, uncaring tone.
Her dark eyes confronted him, challenging him right back.
"If you think I'm going to throw away the rest of my life, staying on here and taking care of two children who aren't mine, then think again, Damien Adair."
For long moments their dark eyes fought in a silent battle of wills, and only when her eyes dropped first did Papa answer.
"You'll stay,"
he said tonelessly. She looked up then, meeting his steady gaze squarely, defiantly.
"Yes, Ellie. You won't leave because you'll be mistress of White Fern and all it contains."
Did he put some special emphasis on all? Perhaps it was only my imagination. And I did have a lively one, even at that time when I was in shock. Vera slipped into my bedroom that night while I cried to whisper in my ear that Papa could have saved my mother's life if he hadn't wanted the baby. "But he didn't love your mother enough," she went on cruelly. "He wanted that baby he was positive would be his son. You can bet your bottom dollar if he'd guessed it would be only another girl like you, he would have told the doctors to let the baby go and save your mother."
"I don't believe you," I sobbed. "Papa didn't tell me there was any choice to make."
"Because he didn't want you to know. You see, he didn't even tell you your mother had a bad heart, and that's why she lay around so much on that purple sofa and on her bed. That's why she was always tired. After you were born, her doctor told them that she shouldn't have another baby. So when Sylvia was caught in what your father calls the birth canal, he could have told the doctors to go ahead and save your mother's life and forget the baby. But he wanted that baby. He wanted a boy. All men want a son. That's why your mother is lying right this moment on a hard, cold slab in a huge refrigerator in the hospital morgue. And tomorrow morning early, they will open the drawer and pull her out and transfer her remains to a mortuary, where men will come and draw out all of her blood. They'll sew her lips and eyelids together so they won't open during the viewing of the deceased. And they will even stuff cotton into...
Vera!
Roared my father, striding into the room and seizing her by her hair.
How dare you come into my daughter's room and fill her head with awful tales?
What kind of sick mind do you have? What kind?
It rained the day of my mother's funeral. It had been raining intermittently for 3 days. Our small family grouped under a drab canopy. The drizzle misted and ran in rivulets to drop on my mother's casket covered with a huge spray of red roses. Standing at the head of that casket was a cross of white roses with a violet ribbon that bore my name in gold. "To Mama, from your loving daughter, Adrina," it read. "Papa," I whispered, tugging on his sleeve, "who sent that cross for me?"
"I did,"
he whispered back.
"The red roses that she loved best are from me. But I thought it more appropriate for white roses to represent a child's love for her mother. Our city friends sent all the other flowers."
I'd never seen so many beautiful flowers gathered together in such a dismal place. Around us, somber-clothed people crowded with sorrowful faces, and still I felt so alone, even though I clung to Papa with one arm and Arden on the other side kept tight hold of my hand.
"Dear friends,"
began the minister of the church we attended every Sunday,
"we are gathered together on this rainy day to pay our last respects to a dear and beloved member of our society, a beautiful and talented lady who could light up a day like this with the sunshine of her presence. She graced our lives and made them better. Because she lived, we are made richer. Because she was generous, there are children in the village of White Fern who had toys and new clothes under their Christmas trees when there would have been none. There was food on the tables of the poor because this lady cared."
On and on I heard of all the good deeds my mother had done. Never had she hinted that she contributed to any of the many charities the church sponsored. And so many times my aunt had called my mother selfish and spoiled, when she'd always been giving and wearing her old clothes she made look new. The wind began to blow, and I swear it felt like snow. Cold. I felt so cold. Clinging closer to Papa, I squeezed hard on his gloved hand that gripped mine. I heard words then that I had known the minister would say sooner or later, even though this was my first funeral.
"Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me."
It seemed I stood there forever with the rain coming down hard and splashing in the puddles it made. Behind my eyes, I pictured my mother singing in her clear soprano voice. "I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses." And now I'd never hear her sing or play anything again. Now that hydraulic lift was going to pick up her casket and lower her into the hole. I'd never see her again. "Papa," I wailed, letting go of Arden and turning my face to press against his jacket front. "Don't let them put Mama down in that wet hole. Let's put her in one of those little houses made of marble." How sad he looked.
"I can't afford a marble mausoleum,"
he whispered back, telling me not to make a spectacle of myself.
"But when we make it rich, we'll have a fine one designed, a temple for your mother. Are you listening, Adrina?"
No, I wasn't listening with both ears. My mind was busy with thoughts as I fixed my eyes on the tombstone of the first and best Adrina. Why weren't they putting my mother beside her? I asked Papa why. His square chin thrust forth.
"I want to lie when I am dead between my wife and my daughter."
"Where will I lie, Papa?" I asked with pain in my heart that must have shone from my eyes. Even in death, I didn't really belong anywhere.
"You'll know your place sooner or later,"
he answered in a tight voice.
"Say no more, Adrina. The villagers are staring at you."
What he said made me gaze around at the White Fern villagers, who never came to call, who never spoke or waved when we drove through their streets. They hated us for too many reasons, said my father, even though none of what had been done in the past was our doing. Yet they came to see my mother buried. Were they the poor she'd fed and clothed and donated money to? If so, why weren't they crying too? Still, I swallowed my tears, straightened my spine, raised my head in imitation of Papa, and knew Mama would approve, wanting me to be brave and strong. Cultured people never show their feelings. They save them for when they are alone. Finally, the funeral was over. The people drifted away to leave only our family ready to ride home in Papa's car. "I'm going to New York," I said to Papa as he held open the front passenger door for me to get in. I've decided I'm going to be a concert pianist like Mama wanted to be. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, that you can do to stop me. Arden was right behind me, ready to climb into our car too and sit with Vera and my aunt in the back seat.
You don't know how to play the piano,
Papa replied harshly.
When your mother was your age, she'd been playing for years. You have not once put your hands on the keyboard. That surely indicates you are not drawn to music.
Neither was she, Papa. She told me her parents forced her to take music lessons, until eventually she caught on. Then she began to like it very much. I'll like music, too, once I know how to play.
Give Adrina her chance,
said Arden, who'd clung to my other hand during the funeral. I was hurt because Billy hadn't come to see my mother buried.
You stay out of this, young man,
growled Papa, throwing Arden a hateful, mean look.
You're only a child, Adrina, and you don't know yet what's right for you. You have other gifts, gifts far more important than banging on the ivories.
I didn't believe for a minute that he really regretted making Mama only a wife and mother, nor did I believe he'd let me escape him, but I was going to give it a try. I'd accomplish everything my mother had desired for herself when she was young and full of dreams. I'd make her dreams come true, rather than sitting on the rocking chair to make Papa's dreams come true.
It's a foolish ambition,
began Papa, still glaring at Arden as if he hoped he'd drop dead and never bother me again.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Adair. Stop putting Adrina down. It's not a foolish ambition to want to fulfill her mother's dreams. Adrina is just the sensitive, feeling kind of person who'd make a great musician. And I know just the right teacher. His name is...
I don't want to hear his name,
stormed Papa.
Are you going to pay for her lessons, boy? For damned if I will. My wife's father spent a fortune thinking his daughter would become world famous, and she failed to follow through.
Why, he was forgetting all he'd said the day Mama died. He didn't have any regrets. None at all. Because she married you, Papa, I raged loud enough for the people still in the cemetery to turn their heads and stare our way. I blanched from their interested stares and moved my eyes to where that slender white headstone stood stark against the stormy sky. How disquieting to see your own name on a headstone.
This is not the place to discuss careers,
said Papa. Once more he addressed Arden.
And you, young man, can stay out of my daughter's life from this day forward. She doesn't need you or your advice.
See you later, called Arden, waving to me and, in his own way, showing his defiance.
That boy means nothing but trouble,
grumbled Papa. Somehow or other, Vera had climbed over the back seat and sat between me and Papa, making him even more angry as she waved frantically to Arden when we passed him by. Now that Mama was gone, the house seemed empty, without a real heart, and Papa seemed to forget the rocking chair. It occurred to me one restless night that if Papa thought I could contact the first and best Adrina by rocking and singing, perhaps I could communicate with Mama by doing the same thing. I wouldn't scream if I saw my mother again. The thought kept me from falling asleep. Did I dare steal into that room and rock all alone, without Papa in the hall outside? Yes, I had to grow up. Somebody had to teach me how, and Mama surely would know her mistakes and tell me how to avoid them. Silently, I tiptoed down the hall past Vera's room where I could hear her radio playing. In the playroom, I lit one dim lamp before I closed the door and looked around. It was not nearly so clean as it had been before Mama died. Aunt Elspeth said she had too much to do if she had to cook and clean and do the laundry as well. The few spiders that had scurried away to hide from Mama had reproduced and were clinging to the ceiling. Some were spinning webs between the lilies of the rocking chair. Feeling repulsed, I went to one of the two armoires and reached inside to find a baby dress. I yanked it off a hanger and dusted the rocking chair, then used the baby dress to shield my shoe before I squashed each spider dead. It was a messy, gruesome thing I'd never done before. Already I was growing stronger. Trembling and weak, I sat gingerly in the chair, ready to jump out if anything bad happened. The house was so quiet I heard myself breathing. Relax. I had to relax. I had to become the empty pitcher that would fill with peace and contentment, and then Mama would come to me. As long as I thought of Mama and not that other Adrina, the boys in the woods wouldn't come. It was one of Mama's songs I chose to sing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. For the first time since Papa had forced me into this chair, it didn't terrify me, for Mama was waiting, as if she'd known I'd do this. Behind my closed lids, I saw her, about 19, running in the fields of spring flowers, and I was a baby in her arms. I knew it was me and not the first Adrina, for around that little girl's neck was my birthstone ring on a golden chain. Then I was seeing Mama helping me tie my sash, teaching me how to form bows. Then, much to my surprise, she had me beside her on the piano bench and was showing me how to play the scales. I was older this time, and the ring once worn on a chain was on my index finger. I came back from the playroom terribly excited. Nothing terrible had happened, and what was more, I'd found out a secret. A lost memory had filled one hole in my brain. Unknown to Papa, Mama had given me a few piano lessons. That knowledge I carried back to my bed, hugged tight in my heart, for now I knew for certain. It had been my mother's desire to see me take her place and find the career love had stolen from her. Part 2. Music begins again. Life became very different in our house after Mama's death. I no longer went into the cupola to find peace and solitude. I sat in the once dreaded rocking chair where I could feel that Mama was near. Because life was opening up for me more and more, I paid little attention to Vera, who had difficulty climbing the stairs. When it rained, she limped worse than when it was dry. Still, I couldn't help but notice she was beginning to be very concerned about her appearance. She washed her hair every day, curled it, polished her nails so often it seemed the house smelled constantly of polish remover. She pressed her slips, her dresses, and sometimes even her sweaters. Even her voice changed. She tried to speak softly and not shrilly as she used to do. I realized in many ways Vera was trying earnestly to imitate my mother's many charms, when I thought they belonged to me alone. The fall days that had seen the last of my mother soon shortened into winter. Thanksgiving and Christmas were bleak celebrations that made my heart ache for Papa and me. Even Vera looked sad when she stared at Mama's empty chair at the foot of the table. When Papa was working, I was alone in a house of enemies, a shadow of what I used to be when my mother lived. I clung to her memory desperately, trying to keep her image sharp in the vagueness of my nebulous memory. Never did I want anything about my mother to sink into those bottomless holes in my brain where all those awful, forgotten memories struggled to reveal themselves. Papa kept me almost a prisoner in our home, clinging to me with a kind of desperation that made me pity him, love him, hate him, and need him too. I wasn't supposed to be seeing Arden at all, but quite frequently I managed to slip away to the cottage in the woods. Whenever I had the chance, I was at the grand piano trying to figure out how to place my hands, how to make a tune come magically from the keys. For hours and hours I banged away before I began to sense the piano resented the sour, ugly noises I made. I couldn't play. Even if Mama had tried to teach me a long time ago, I hadn't inherited any of her talent any more than I had inherited talent from the first and best Adrina. Not gifted. Not gifted. I went around tormenting myself.
Adrina,
Arden comforted me one day after I complained to him that I wasn't gifted.
No one magically, automatically knows how to play.
Listen, I said. I'll tell Papa I just have to have piano lessons. He'll pay for them if I plead hard enough.
No doubt,
he answered, looking away uneasily. Then hand in hand we walked toward his cottage. Much to my disappointment, Billy stayed at the window but still didn't invite me inside the cottage. Arden and I sat on the back porch and talked to her through the open window. Flies could easily enter her house, and that would have driven my aunt crazy. Billy didn't seem worried about flies, but she did seem happy to see me again. That very evening I approached Papa about music lessons.
I've heard you banging. If ever anyone needed lessons, it's you.
Of course, your mother would have been thrilled. I'm thrilled, too.
I couldn't believe he'd changed his mind so completely. He seemed lonely, bored, making me step